This is a free Off the Ball podcast. For access to the best GAA analysis from the likes of Tommy Walsh, Richie Hogan, Seamus Flanagan, Sarah O'Donovan, Pat Ryan, Jim Gavin, Darren O'Sullivan, Stephen Rochford and David Hyland, become an Off the Ball member today.
Join in the obsession.
Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Welcome along to another episode of Sounds of the Summer. A look back on some of the biggest GAA stories which have dominated the inter-county scene over the last few months. This podcast series will look back at some of the most gripping talking points throughout what was a sensational summer of sport, and also look ahead to what could come next. In this episode, the GAA's National Head of Hurling, Willie Maher, joined Owen Sheehan back in April, live in studio for an in-depth look at the state of the game, the new rules, and what to look out for over the next few months.
Willie Maher is a former tip hurler, is the GAA's national head of hurling. He's been in the role since the start of last year. The development of hurling, always such a fascinating conversation to have, which we try and do repeatedly on this show. So I'm happy to say that Willie is here with us in studio. Willie, how are you keeping?
I'm absolutely great. Thanks a million for having me in.
It feels kind of like the first championship weekend or the first weekend of summer hurling. Maybe it's because the clocks have gone forward. I know it's very much a league final weekend, but it does kind of feel like the start of something important when you get to... What is it, the first weekend of April?
It is, and I think once the, well, obviously the hour going back last week, the bright evenings, the bright mornings, I think it's just, it is hurling season, it's GAA season, and yeah, there's an excitement around the place, and then particularly obviously with the 1A and 1B final this weekend, it's, yeah, with championship just around the corner as well. So yeah, there's a lot of excitement with the hurling and football people at the moment.
So at the Gaelic grounds, it's going to be Clare versus Dublin in the 1B final at 1:45 on Sunday, and then after that, 4:00. The big one, Limerick versus Cork. This is probably going to be the first opportunity for a lot of people to see the new rules in hurling that were passed to Congress. Not as dramatic as, say, the football ones last year, but a few important bits. I know people who've been watching club matches or finals and matches from other divisions in intercounty hurling over the course of last weekend will have seen these in action already. But what we've got basically are changes to the descent rule. You might just break this down for us, first of all, really, in terms of what people need to be keeping an eye out for, whether they're watching this game on television or at the Gaelic grounds this weekend.
Yeah, and even just to go back a bit further on it, we did a kind of a fairly extensive consultation process last year with stakeholders on the ground through hurling development roadshows chaired by Terry Riley. It came from the ground as regards that we want, I suppose, better respect for referees. We want a game that's, I suppose, more... just again, without the dissent, without the arguing, without the moaning, we saw it a lot on big days last year, particularly the Munster final. A lot of activity on the sideline. Look, just to tidy up our game and make, I suppose, bring that level of respect back to where it should be, in my opinion. So we got that from, again, the ground. It came. This is a bottom up situation as regards this feedback has come from people on the ground. The second piece then was we obviously brought it to Congress with the Hurling Development Committee, but also through Rules Advisory. It got 95.1% as regards backing from Congress. So this is, the association is putting their power behind having this rule to tidy up our game. I suppose the nuances of it would be any player dissent, and that's verbal, physical, towards the referee or an opponent is 30 metres straight away. So referee brings the ball up straight away. So I think that will tidy up a good piece of any kind of interaction or any negative interaction between officials on the sideline or on the field. So that's the first piece. The second piece then will be around on the sideline for managers, selectors, coaches, that any, again, altercation with referees, be it physical, verbal, threatening in any form, is a 21-yard free. So similar to, I suppose, the football situation, the ball is moved in front of the goal, invariably it's a point. So you're punished for any kind of negative interaction.
Okay. Why did this seem so important to you? It's pretty obvious that we want to stamp dissent out of the game and make the game just a less frustrating watch at times. But in terms of the bigger picture, what are you thinking? What is the outcome from this when these rules will hopefully sink their teeth into the spectacle and we get a better, less frustrating prospect?
Yeah, I think so. But again, I suppose we had a situation in Cork at one of those roadshows in Portcullis last year, and one of the referees kind of stood up and just said, look, I'm refereeing hurling, I'm refereeing football. Refereeing football is a lot easier than refereeing hurling now, as regards, from any kind of dissent piece, as regards, there's no decisions questioned in football anymore. So why can't we have this for hurling? And that was number one. Number two, as part of that, again, recruitment and retention of referees is so important. If we don't have referees, we don't have a game of hurling. And it's I think it's really important to have that. I had a phone call this morning from a friend of mine who's near retirement as regards from a club player. Number one, talking about the importance of, I suppose, teams embracing this and players driving this on the field. It's gone into their local club WhatsApp. These are the three or four key pieces, and we're going to, I suppose, use this as an advantage over other teams that are less disciplined. Also, at the end of the call, he says to me, I might go refereeing. Right. And I was going to go on, blew me away as regard, yeah, because the same individual, I had no idea he was even thinking that. But he said, if this were to translate into a cultural change within the game, this individual would go training. And look, that's only one example from one phone call this morning. So I think, I think it's really exciting as regards that, again, just get on with the game and let the officials, again, refereeing big matches is very difficult as well. Like, making split-second decisions under pressure from everybody, including players, is a really difficult ask. So I suppose this is giving referees more space to make better decisions at the most important times in our game, which again will lead to less frustration from sidelines or anywhere else.
Is the recruitment of referees a bit of an alarm bell at the moment for the association?
I suppose that does sit in games administration and. But it's probably always an issue as regards, yeah, that we need, again, and then developing the referees that we have to allow them to train them, to develop them, to make better decisions on the big day. Hurling is a really difficult game to referee, and we have to give them as much support as we can as an association together, that we're all kind of in this as hurling people to make our game better.
In terms of what you've seen then over the last year, this is an effective process of getting this motion through Congress, and we're going to see it in full flow over the course of this year and beyond. What are the other main takeaways from your first year in this role? Granted, that's a pretty broad question, but has anything surprised you? Has anything stuck out to you from your various trips around the country, in both the really, really strong counties within the country and those that are struggling to keep up?
I think it's, and you've kind of nailed it in the question as regards. Each area has a different ask. Each area is a different problem as regards that we're trying to find solutions for. So a blanket approach to everything will not work as regards in this instance. So you're talking about the emerging counties and the bottom ranking counties at the moment, where participation is relatively low in comparison to other sports, or particularly in Gaelic football terms. Like, that's a participation experience ask. How do we get more hurlies in kids' hands to allow them experience the game? Again, I've continually referenced, I worked in a previous role with a colleague from Kildare, and he'd never had kids' hands to allow them experience the game. Again, I've continually referenced, I worked in a previous role with a colleague from Kildare, and he'd never held a hurley before. Like, and that's stark as regards in
Lee McCarthy County.
Lee McCarthy now. Yeah. You know, so, like, and again, he's a gentleman, probably 45 or 6 years of age, but again, huge work having gone on there. Again, in that development Peace County as regards in the middle tier, it's a participation ask as well, but also trying to drive high performance standards to allow players to compete, and having, I suppose, managed leash, understanding the piece that is needed. How can we get more players playing the game and bringing them through by playing at a higher standard hurling? In the Lee McCarthy issue, in the counties, it's a separate ask as well. As regards, it's probably top end, and the problems there seem minuscule compared to the bottom ranking counties. But there is still issues there, and I suppose the elite coaching piece and creating better pathways through, more development opportunities for players, more games. Again, it's very important, and I was at a lunch a couple of weeks ago with the Clare GAA, and that was the message as regards to them. Just again, from chatting to individuals around the room, just don't forget the strong counties either, as regards that it's important that we keep driving forward with the fantastic quality of product we have and the amount of players we have here, but also again focusing on the non-traditional areas, which again is very much part of my remit.
Do you have a target in mind or a metric that you'll be able to use to gauge whether or not your tenure is a success? Like, you talk about getting hurleys into the hands of every kid or a vast majority of kids around Ireland. Is that something that you're targeting? Do you have numbers or a percentage of kids on that front?
Yeah, I think that has to be it, because like it's nice to say, oh, we'll get a hurley in every kid's hand, or that would be the goal. How do you measure that? Because again, what's measured is done. Yes, is the answer to the question. We are working through, I suppose, establishing baseline data figures as regards where we are with certain areas. We have teams, we have games that go on per county, but really getting into that participation piece and understanding it more, number one. Number two, then building out plans that are robust to actually tackle. Again, equipment is a barrier to entry here. How do we provide equipment at a lesser cost or target into certain areas? But that has to be linked with coaching, which is a really big issue as regards, as a barrier. Oh, I've never hurled before, so I can't coach. Couldn't be further from the truth as regards. This is a relatively simple game when broken down as regards and holding a hurley, getting your stance right, getting your swing right. These are really basic things for any child in the world to go after. So that's the second piece. And then the provision of games and making sure that, again, the kids that have equipment, the kids that are being coached, have actually games to play. And again, we have metrics within the association at the moment to establish baseline figures around nurseries or goal games, but really getting into that and, again, tackling the areas that need to be tackled. So they're the three, I suppose, key pieces for me that they're three legs of a stool, and without one of those, that stool would not sail.
The equipment deficit, is that a real problem in the counties that we would consider the weaker counties at, say, senior intercounty hurling? Is it simple to say your example of Clare is just laden with equipment and the weaker counties, say if you, I don't know, go up the Western Seaboard to Roscommon, Sligo, Donegal, do they just have less equipment, less available opportunities for kids to actually play the sport?
I think it's part of it as regards, you look at a situation like Donegal, we had an initiative last year, new clubs, we had 45 new clubs that, and they're GA clubs that weren't playing hurling that are now playing hurling. So that's a real, I suppose, focus on year one to get that figure and obviously to build it out over the coming years as well. They had seven new clubs, as I said. They had a really successful league. They were narrowly defeated by Wicklow on the weekend. Huge work going on there through Mary Coughlin, the chairman, or chairperson, and Cormac Hartnett, the hurling officer. Like, you know, but to your point, it's part of the issue as regards, it's not that there's more gear in Clare than there is in Donegal, but I suppose it's just part of the fabric and part of the culture. And where I'm from in Tipperary, the first thing you're handed is, not handed, but a hurley and a helmet, and you go play. We play equally football as well, but at the same time, that's probably not the case up the country as regards when that line from Dublin to Galway and up, making hurling more connected to communities, and gear is very much part of that, because again, for non-traditional counties in with parents that have never played the game, it's not part of their culture. So you're trying to find ways to target equipment again, but without the coaching and without the games, we are, you know, we it'll be very difficult to establish anything.
Trying to embed hurling into communities where it hasn't previously been strong feels like the overarching challenge in all of this. The measurables, I'm sure, are going to be things that you can go after very clearly, and you'll be able to have exact naked data of how successful or otherwise things have been. But actually trying to, you know, I guess, infiltrate communities, try and ensure that hurling kind of is growing from the ground up in communities in non-traditional areas, that feels like a real challenge. How do you go about doing that?
It is, but like, you know, again from a lot of travelling and a lot of visits around the country to clubs, to counties, there's a huge appetite to experience hurling. Like that's it's our national sport. Like, again, going to a match or experiencing the big days kind of gives kids or gives people the window into this game. And it's just so important as regards to give kids the opportunity. And again, the performance metrics or the metrics that we will be judging a county in the emerging counties to the strong counties are totally different. Like, this is literally, how do we get kids to experience that thrill of hitting a ball, of being on a pitch, of, I suppose, experiencing the game at its best. So I think it is difficult. And you look at it again, I think 1,610 clubs throughout the country, 796 of them provide hurling to their members. So there's nearly a 50% opportunity for us to allow kids to play the game. And this is literally nursery goal games. They're the targets I'm looking at as regards and really going after in the next year, getting more hurling played. And again, bringing that number of 790 plus kids our clubs up. That's the piece. Just another piece on that would be the target for this year. We had 45 new clubs last year. We've 30 next year. 30 this year, 30 next year, 30 the year after. If we could hit those metrics, that would be a significant improvement in the amount of hurling being played through clubs in the country.
The 30 new clubs, where generally are they?
Again, the biggest opportunities probably are Connacht and Ulster and parts of Leinster. They're I think last year we had 18 new clubs in Ulster, with 17 in Leinster, which is a huge, I think with 7 in Wicklow. So there's a lot of work going on in pockets, just making that more strategic and understanding, I suppose, the needs of people on the ground. And just, again, trying to get hurling played more.
Are they generally built out of football clubs?
Yeah, absolutely. They're GA clubs that were playing football only. And or there are amalgamations of two or three football clubs to be a hurling club. Again, a Kerry example, the work in Tralee Parnells over the last couple of years has been off the charts. Like, they won the Minor A last year in Kerry. Tralee CBS were unlucky to lose the All-Ireland Colleges B final this year. Like, there's huge, I suppose, success stories throughout the country. It's literally trying to enable others to follow on that path.
Of the 790 clubs, there's also a question, I presume, around the effectiveness of getting the message home with regards to hurling, that a lot of people can tick a box saying, yeah, we do have hurling in this club, but really how effective are the training methods? How many times a week are you training? How many age groups are actually covered by the fact that hurling is generally covered as an umbrella in this club? How much have you drilled down into that?
There is an awful lot of that as regards and just understanding that. But I suppose for emerging counties, it's literally, how do we get this off the ground? How do we start a team and help and enable volunteers to actually coach and be there? And then obviously with county officials to make sure that there's a games program there as well. Huge amount of success stories. Again, as we mentioned, they're going around the country and looking at clubs that are playing more hurling and playing more games are thriving. As regards, so it's providing more games to the membership through the volunteers. So yeah, it's a really difficult ask, but at the same time, hurling is, again, it's a brilliant sport, and again, making it easy and establishing solutions to those three or four barriers that I mentioned. That's the plan, or that's the trajectory, direction of travel that we are on now. And look, it's exciting, I suppose. That's the other piece in this. We spoke about it at the start, the summer's evenings and hurling being played and sport being played. Like, it's a really exciting time for clubs that embrace this. And I said we had 45 last year. Brilliant. We supported also 70 existing clubs last year with gear packs through the Hurling Development Committee, through our refresher pack. We had 70 of those clubs in Croke Park on All-Ireland final day, club final day this year. Like, the energy and the enthusiasm, and just, it was absolutely brilliant.
What are the gear packs? So you pick 70 clubs and they get sent out, what is it, 30 hurls or something like that, is it?
It was 15 hurlies, super. 15 helmets, 6 or 7 dozen hurling balls, poles, cones. But again, it was just, again, identified through the provincial games managers, through the county boards or county games managers, where to go. And I suppose it's up to us to be more strategic in that and really go after areas that we can provide more hurling in, but it has to be aligned with games and coach education as well.
Really interesting around the budget last year, people would have seen the news that 750 grand is going to go towards the growth of hurling. Where does that specifically go? Where is that cash going to flow towards?
Again, the pillars of the plan that we presented to government, coaching, which is a huge piece, and just a really important piece in the whole jigsaw. The equipment piece, as regards to a lesser extent, as regards, because we already have established programs within the association to provide gear to clubs, hurleys and helmets. But the games program as well is just really important to make sure that kids are being provided with gear, or with, sorry, games, to actually go and make sure that gear is used and games go ahead. So the club sustainability piece was a really big piece of that as well, and very much targeted, as we targeted with the packs, but also further investment for 26, 27 and 28 around providing support for volunteers in clubs to provide hurling.
It's interesting to see the government realise the potential here and the issue of not having hurling as a truly national sport. What were those conversations like? Was that a pretty easy thing to get over the line, that 750k?
Well, I don't know. Is there anything ever easy when you're talking about that amount of money? But at the same time, I think the government realised, and Minister McConnellogue and Minister O'Donovan were absolutely fantastic as regards in recognising the importance of hurling to Ireland, and it very much part of our identity. And that's, I think that's, you know, with Minister O'Donovan, that was something that I think was really important, and he recognised that. And obviously being a Limerick man and really understanding the importance of hurling to communities, but also the caveat with that was hurling in non-traditional areas, and that's where that money is going. And that's, I suppose, the plan that we've laid out across those pillars are being supported by the government. And again, every time you see someone with a foreign dignitary or whoever coming into the country, we hand them a hurley. So how can we, I suppose, make it more universal throughout our country?
Yeah, definitely. We'll come back to that in a sec, but the non-traditional areas is where that money is going. Can you tell us where exactly, what counties?
Again, I suppose in that emerging space as regards, and there's probably 20 counties in that, but also the developing counties as regards parts of... I suppose non-traditional is non-traditional, and that's a lot of the country outside the top 7 or 8 counties. So that's where it's going.
This is a free Off the Ball podcast. For access to the best GAA analysis from the likes of Tommy Walsh, Richie Hogan, Seamus Flanagan, Sarah O'Donovan, Pat Ryan, Jim Gavin, Darren O'Sullivan, Stephen Rochford, and David Hyland, become an Off the Ball member today.
Join in the obsession.
Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.